commencing countdown.
3, 2, 1.
This is the Contracting Experience. Connecting government contracting professionals to the world around them through conversations with acquisition influencers, insights into evolving hot topics, and sharing lessons learned from the field.
Welcome, podcast listeners. On this episode of The Contracting Experience, we sit down with Mr. Tony Everidge, a member of the Senior Executive Service and the Executive Director of the Air Force Installation Contracting Center at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Ohio. In this capacity, he assists the commander with leading more than 750 operational acquisition professionals responsible for a $55 billion contract portfolio. Additionally, the organization directs enterprise-wide installation strategic sourcing efforts for the Air Force and oversees $9.1 billion in annual obligations in mission and installation requirements. Mr. Everidge joins us on the podcast today to discuss contracting as a team sport, using various sports analogies and their relevance in our daily business operations. Mr. Everidge, our listeners might be curious about our topic today, contracting as a team sport, but I think we'll have some fun exploring it. Thanks so much for being willing to have the conversation. Welcome, Mr. Everidge.
Yeah, thanks, Rob, and really happy to be here. Thank you for having me. I think this will be a fun discussion. I'm looking forward to talking about it. You know, we're here, we're ready. We just ended a fiscal year. We're ready to start a new fiscal year. So I kind of look at that in the sports analogy. We just finished a season. Now we're ready to start a new one. There's always excitement and anticipation with that. So looking forward to this next fiscal year and looking forward to the conversation today.
Excellent, sir. Great analogy, and thanks for introducing our first sports reference of the show, kicking off a new season. I love it. So, a couple fun facts about Tony Everidge, and that you're not only a big sports fan, but you also played basketball for Wittenberg University, and even played in that 1983 Division III National Championship game. Not only that, but then you also played basketball in a semi-professional league at the same time you were beginning your government career. Those must have been some incredible experiences. To set the stage, as we discuss contracting being a team sport, can you maybe share a couple life lessons from your playing days that you carried into your professional career?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's certainly, sports definitely has always been a big part of my life and really taught me a lot. I think there's a lot of great life lessons that you can learn from it going forward. It's great for kids today as well. Certainly, work ethic is one of the big ones that I always take away from that. You know, I think back on all of the preparation, all of the training that went into getting ready for all those different seasons and all those different games. And as I think about that, you know, we go through a lot of training and a lot of preparation as contracting and acquisition professionals. One of the things that really stood out to me is, you know, and it was brought on me, especially by my college coach, but in earlier days as well. Every day that I stepped onto the court, I wanted to be a little bit better than I was before. And, you know, we talk a lot about in the government and in contracting about continuous improvement. I think we should also strive to get better every day. Every day we come into the office, we should bring our best. We should bring that same mindset to always be improving. You know, there's always one of the things I've always loved about contracting, and when I started, I really had no idea what it even was, but I've grown to really love it. There's always something new to learn. There's always new tools or techniques. There's always things changing, things that we're not familiar with. So there's always that continuous learning there. We've got a team here in AFICC right now who's building a CDC up at Hanscom Air Force Base under another transaction using net zero technologies for energy reduction. So that's something we would have never thought about before, but it's really interesting and really neat. And some of the tools and techniques we're using there are just phenomenal. So really, as contracting professionals, I think every one of us should strive to get better every day, bringing our best to the job every day. And like you said, Rob, our business never ends, so we can't rest on our laurels. We get one effort awarded, it's successful. We can't stop there because there's another one, there's a follow-on. So we always have to strive to improve and bring the best that we can every day.
Right on, sir. That's a great way to set the stage. Challenging us to bring our best every day and getting a little better at what we do each day with an emphasis on continuous improvement. That's awesome. And we can see how that advice can certainly pay off on the sports fields, as well as in our daily personal and professional lives. Awesome stuff. And then we often hear the phrase contracting is a team sport. I've also heard on occasion that contracting is a full contact sport. I hope by full contact refers to communication rather than any physical contact. But I think we like to use the phrase, and the concept is that it just means that it takes multiple people from various disciplines and everybody needs to do their part. But I think there's a lot more to it. What do you think? What does that phrase contracting as a team sport mean to you, sir?
Yeah, I think teamwork is huge. And certainly while there's no physical contact, we always have to be in contact with our team members to be successful. Teamwork's always been huge for me. It's always been fascinating to me to watch a team come together, form, kind of go through that process so that as a group, they become much more efficient and effective than they could have ever done alone. I think it's also important, just like on an athletic team, that every person on the acquisition team knows their role. What is their job? The contracting officer, the contract specialist, pricing, legal, program management, logistics, financial management. Everybody has an important job to play. Some of those maybe not as glorious as others, but all really just as important as another one. I always think about an offensive line on a football team. You know, it's usually the running back who made it through the hole and got the ball across the end zone who's getting the applause. But that would have never happened without the right play call, without those offensive linemen clearing the path. So I think, you know, it's not always the PCO who signs the contract. It's not just a clearance authority who gave the approval or the source selection authority. A lot of times it's that procurement analyst who found a way to get around a waiver or something like that, or who cleared a hurdle that helped this team succeed. So I think having that type of a teamwork mindset, that it's not just that running back that scored, we all scored. It's not just that PCO that signed the contract that made this happen, but we as a team made that happen. I also think a couple other keys, Rob, on that too, that goes along with the teamwork piece is communication. You know, we always had to be talking to each other on the basketball court so everybody knew what was going on. And then there's an accountability piece, which I know we'll probably hit on a little bit more later, but that attitude of I'm part of this team and I don't want to let the team down. So I think if we bring that teamwork mindset and that team first attitude to everything we do on the acquisition team, I think that can go a long way. And I know being part of a team is one of the reasons that I really love this career, love contracting and love acquisition.
That's great, sir. Perfect, again, sports analogy with the offensive linemen. Talk about a thankless job, but an absolutely vital role they play. The only time their number gets called is when there's a penalty, and oftentimes the great work they do the rest of the game tends to get overlooked. But the bottom line is, really, without those offensive linemen, you'd never score any points. And without the super talented folks in our contracting buying offices supporting the positions, we'd never award any contracts either. And that's awesome, sir. Another great sports analogy, and I think we're two for two so far. You also mentioned accountability, so let's go there for a bit. I'm sure during your playing days, you were very much held accountable for being ready to play, knowing the plays and executing the plays. And I'm sure there were some film sessions that might have been a bit uncomfortable, where you may have gotten some very direct feedback when those expectations weren't quite met. I've always thought it would be very interesting if we had film on our performance each week, or maybe if we had to give a post-week press conference and field questions on how we felt our performance held up during the week. Or what if our contributions were made public, like stats on the back of a baseball card? I mean, there's really no hiding from that sort of accountability. But realistically thinking, probably the best gauge on our performance is probably an honest self-assessment while also being willing to accept constructive feedback. Do you have any examples of how you were held accountable in the past and how it made you feel, or how you encourage accountability across your workforce today?
Yeah, no, that's a great analogy. And I can remember back in college, film days, whether we won or lost the game, was not necessarily always something we looked forward to, because we were going to get the same feedback either way. They were going to point out the things you did well, the things you did wrong, areas you could improve in. So it was always really good feedback. And so while I certainly wouldn't advocate necessarily giving feedback in the way some of my coaches gave it to me, I think that type of feedback is always very important to do. So, you know, in terms of the accountability piece of that, to me, accountability just means standing up and taking ownership of a particular task or effort. And again, that in the sports analogy, when we were going over the film, you know, you had a responsibility when you were on the court. You had a role to play. You had to set a pick at the right spot. You had to make the pass at the right time or to the right place. You had to be at the right spot at the right time, that you were responsible for boxing out on rebounds. And every possession was really all the position coaches, every possession was picked apart, and you got feedback as an individual, things you did well, things you could do better, and where you could improve. And the thing, Rob, about that was with the accountability there, the film was right in front of you. It told the story. And if you missed it, you missed it. And there was no making excuses or anything like that. So to me, that accountability means taking ownership of what I did or didn't do. You know, when I look at that in terms of the acquisition, world, I think it's also important that we get good feedback. Now, I think we need to do that in the right way, and I think it can always be done in a positive manner, but from the best of us who've been around for a long time, who maybe really know what they're doing, I think there's still a lot of room to improve. So having that feedback and that accountability piece is key. I also think, you know, I mentioned self-improvement before. Again, I don't care if you've been a PCO for 25 years. There's always room to improve. So getting good feedback is vital to that. I know I learned when I'm here working with General Trevino when she was the AFICC commander, I really learned a lot about accountability and feedback from her. She was really, really good about providing candid feedback on what we did well and what I could do better, and not just me, but our entire team. But that feedback that she brought was always in a constructive manner with an eye on improving and getting better. It wasn't putting anybody down. It wasn't trying to make anybody feel horrible, but it was always with a constructive bent to, hey, here's how you can improve. Here's how you can do better. You know, a lot of times I think today some supervisors and folks, we want to be, I guess I would say, a nice guy or a nice girl. And we don't necessarily want to hurt somebody's feelings. And certainly none of us want to do that. But I do think, you know, we can be nice, but we also need to be kind. And I think in being kind, that means really telling people where they, you know, where maybe they came up short, but then also in a constructive way, hey, here's how you can go forward to improve. And I think, you know, for any sports team, that's vital to continuous improvement. I think for any acquisition team, that's important. So I think to me, the accountability piece means owning what I did, owning how I can improve, receiving that feedback in the right manner, and then putting it into practice to improve.
Wow, sir, that's great, especially with stressing the importance of giving feedback and being willing to accept feedback. The positive feedback is easy, right? It's easy to give. It's usually well received. Everybody feels good. But sometimes it's hard to give and it's not great to hear, right? So sometimes it can be deflating or make us defensive. Sometimes it stings a little bit and bruises the ego. But as you said, it's absolutely necessary in order to improve. General Trevino, a couple episodes ago, shared one of her learning moments as a young cadet at the Air Force Academy. And sometimes that feedback hurts. But if you can look back, maybe open the lens a little wider, check the ego, and oftentimes you're going to find that there's something there. There's a learning opportunity if you're just willing to consider it. So I'll never forget, several years ago, I had a boss, Major Mike Lydon. I was a not-so-young staff sergeant, and I was whining about something. I don't even remember what it was. But he asked me, he said, "So, Rob, do you think that's a problem with you or a problem with everybody else?" Ugh, he got me. And he was absolutely right. It wasn't an everybody problem. It was a me problem. Maybe it was just a Rob-lem, if you will. So that one definitely stuck with me, and it's a good gauge for me every now and then to kind of reflect on that question. But again, that constructive feedback, it's hard. And there's certainly a skill required in delivering it. As the late, great Dr. Maya Angelou said, right, people won't necessarily remember the words that were said, but they'll definitely remember how you made them feel. And something else to keep in mind, when you stop getting feedback, it might mean that they've kind of given up on you, right?
Rob, that's a great point. My head coach in college, Larry Hunter, made that actual comment to me. He said, "As long as I'm on you and continually telling you things that you can do to get better or things you did wrong," he said, "that means there's hope for you. That means I care about you. That means you can get better." He says, "If I'm not telling you anything, that's when you need to worry."
Yes, sir. That's perfect. Thanks for sharing that. So we've covered accountability and feedback, two areas that are certainly required for any team success. Let's dive into another one. How about player development? On any team, you want to capitalize on the talent available and ensure that the team is performing to its full potential. So in sports, they have strength trainers, nutritionists, physical therapists, specialized coaches, you name it. And it's not just for the rookies, but it's for the veterans as well to keep them sharp. So how do you approach the development of contracting professionals in your organization, say for both the rookies as well as us seasoned veterans, to ensure that your team is continually growing, learning, and staying ahead of that curve in such a dynamic and ever-changing field?
Yeah, no, absolutely great question, Rob. And this is so important. You know, our workforce is more and more junior now. We're bringing in a lot of brand new interns and copper caps that are going to be vital to our success in the future. So the training piece is very important. And to me, one of the most important training pieces, I go back to when I started. I was very fortunate to have an incredible first level supervisor who was really good and was able to teach me. So I think starting there is one of the things that I would talk about in terms of player development. We really need to make sure we're developing our supervisors, especially our first level supervisors. And I think, you know, really across the board here, this is one of the things I think that AFICC as a team has really excelled in. One of the things that our team has done is develop supervisory training. Because again, as I said, most of our first level supervisors are pretty junior, and yet they're critical for the organization because they're making that day-to-day contact with those brand new employees, with those who've been on the journey for a couple years and are striving, and even some of the more seasoned employees. So their touch points, training ability is vital. Our KX organizations work with AFIMSC and to develop this training and mentoring. We've given them a toolbox so that they've got things they can go. Mr. Grable has set up our AFIMSC executive director has set up a supervisory communication forum where we can kind of hear different things from different supervisors going forward. So that whole mentoring aspect is going forward. Within AFICC, we're about ready to roll into the second phase of ours, which is to set up some mentoring with some more senior supervisors for some of the junior supervisors coming up as well. Kind of moving on down the track with that. As you know, most contracting organizations are really hurting right now and in need of unlimited contracting officers and even limited contracting officers. So another thing we've done here in AFICC is really set up what we've called our warrant initiatives. Over the last couple of years, we were looking at individuals who had went through our contracting officer study group. And what we found was there was a lot of people who were going through the study group, but then for whatever reason, were not going on to complete their warrant. So our group did a full analysis of that, and there was various reasons why some of the people weren't doing that. Some of the people just wanted to go through and get the knowledge. Some of the people felt even after going through the study group that they still weren't quite ready to go sit before that board. So our team kind of, in analyzing that data, put together several initiatives. They put together a mentor-mentee program. And what we do there is we take some people who've just successfully went through the program and went to the board and had them kind of paired them up with people who are going through the board now so that they can kind of be an encourager to them and share some of the lessons and feedback there and help with that training. Additionally, we've tried to always, talking about continuous improvement, to develop our PCOs. We continually look at the COSG curriculum that we have and the way we present it so that we make sure we're covering that. We've set up some additional study groups and different tools for mock boards to use all across the Air Force to kind of help improve that process. So again, we want to develop PCOs and we want to develop contract specialists. So we're doing everything we can to pour into that. And the last thing I'd mention in the player development effort is really our acquisition center of excellence falls under our KA shop. The ACE sits down in San Antonio. They're doing a lot of things. And when I got here, they were primarily involved in the source selection aspect and helping teams get ready for source selections. And in talking to them, I said, you know, we've got a lot of junior teams, and I really need you to kind of help them from the time that team starts working one of our big enterprise acquisitions. So we pulled them back to the left. We've set them up as kind of mentors for some of our new acquisition teams. We've implemented an acquisition review team process so that we have a collaborative review so that other people can be brought in, junior folks can be brought in to kind of observe that process and learn from some of our bigger acquisition processes that we have going. They can implement that on the smaller. So the goal is just we all improve and grow together as we go through that process. So player development is huge. We're doing a lot in AFICC, but I think there's still a lot more that we can do, not only here, but across the Air Force.
Wow, sir, that was a great response to that question. I didn't realize I teed you up quite so well for that one. Great response. So AFICC is clearly fostering that culture of continuous learning and continuous improvement by making the investment in your people and offering so many opportunities for personal and professional growth. That's awesome. So in your response, you mentioned that your team did a deep dive into why folks weren't pursuing their warrants. So probably some interviews, maybe some surveys. You probably looked for some trends. In my world in the AFMC Digital Division, we would call that data analysis. So sticking with our sports theme, the movie Moneyball, right, highlighted the Oakland A's as one of the first teams to adopt the use of data analytics in sports. Almost every team has since followed suit in some degree. So do you have any other examples of how you've seen our contracting profession change with the increased access to and the use of all this data that's now available to us at every level?
Well, we use data quite a bit. In fact, I've always been impressed. We have an entire business intelligence group here in our AFICCKA who goes through, does an analysis of spend. Some people know about what we do with category management, where we look at different categories of spend. We look at how much is being spent across the Air Force. And then we also look at, is there a way that we can use that data to look at, is there opportunities there for an enterprise acquisition? Is there a way there that we need to implement some policy or demand management to maybe look at an inventory control process to so that we're not buying things that we don't need? So we're using data across the board that way. The other thing that we're doing is, data is becoming more and more prolific. We're absolutely pulling. We've got program managers, a lot of program managers in that business intelligence skill. We're also pulling contract data specialists in there now too. One of the things going forward that I've always said is I kind of view analytics and the ability to use data is going to be a key skill for contracting professionals going forward. I kind of look at it like pricing. Everybody in contracting is not going to be a pricer. However, everybody in contracting needs to know how to price and have that skill. And I kind of look at that at the analytics thing. So we're doing a lot of training and development on the use of analytics and data going forward, because that's a skill. Even if you're not going to be a contract data specialist, you're going to have to know how to use, interpret, and analyze and present data in a way to help to back and support your decisions. So we're doing a lot of things on all of our programs. All of our enterprise programs, we're implementing data and metrics so we can track how those programs are doing. Are we getting out of those programs what we intended to get out of them? Are they meeting the program objectives? So we're using data across the board. And I know certainly if you talk to our KA folks, they could fill up a couple hours in terms of things they've got going on with it. Over.
Oh, right, sir. Your business intelligence cell is awesome. I had the pleasure of working with those folks early on. In fact, they really blazed the trail for a lot of these interactive dashboards and various tools that are now being used in PMRT and Advana and can also be found through the Digital Acquisition Tools environment on Air Force Contracting Central. It's great to see AFICC continuing to use the available data to make strong business decisions. So getting back to our player development discussion, well, let's discuss what it takes to be a strong team player. In your experience, what qualities do you believe make up the ultimate team player in our contracting world? What traits or behaviors do you look for when you're sitting on those interview panels, rotation boards, or during succession planning? What traits put someone at the top of your draft board, so to speak?
Well, the two that are really very subjective that are important to me have always been, attitude. I think that says a lot, and that's sometimes hard to pick up on initially, but, over time, I think you can. And passion for what you're doing, I think, is huge. But in terms of what makes an ideal team player, I really think, as I thought about this a little bit, I really think that our Air Force core values kind of spell this out. So, we talk about integrity first. to me, in that vein, and when I think about it as a team player, integrity means owning my effort, kind of like I've talked about already, owning the results of what I did or didn't do, not making excuses or pointing fingers. You know, things go wrong on programs all the time. Dates are missed, funding doesn't come, whatever happens, and it's really easy to sit there and point fingers at each other across the team. However, it's much more productive to say, what could I do better? What could we do better? And try to move forward. So I think that integrity in terms of owning what I did or didn't do is a huge part of being a team player. The second part of that I think is really, really vital. The service before self, that selfless attitude that puts team before me, that looks at it instead of saying I did this, but saying, hey, rather we did this. Because, you know, Rob, in all the years I've been doing contracting, I never have awarded a program and executed a contract myself. It was always a team effort, and there was a lot of people that went into supporting that. Kind of going back to the whole offensive lineman attitude, you know, I really like it, and a lot of times I'm a big college football fan. I enjoyed the rainy weekend we just had because it gave me an excuse to sit in and watch a lot of football. I always like it when a receiver scores or when a running back scores. You know, sometimes they're doing dances in the end zone, which is all well and good and fun. But I always like to see when those guys, after they score, they come back and they thank and give high fives to all of their offensive linemen because they realize they would have never got there without them. So I think have that team first attitude, that selfless attitude is vital. And then finally, just the excellence in all we do. That's the other piece I look for, that continuous improvement. Am I striving to be the best that I can be? You know, am I giving it my best every day? You know, and bringing my best to every meeting that I'm in, to everything that I'm involved in. You know, that's tough and that's exhausting, but what we're doing for the Air Force is worth that effort. And so to me, that whole integrity, owning my effort, that selfless attitude, and being the best that I can be every day really all sets the pace for being a good team player.
Excellent, sir. I love how you brought in the Air Force core values, something we can all strive to measure up to every day. Integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all we do. I totally agree. The folks that epitomize those values would certainly be at the top of my draft board as well. And I always liked how Rick Pitino described what he was looking for in his players. He wanted the passionate, the hungry, and the driven.
Yeah, I'll share a quick story there with you too, Rob. Years ago when I was in AFRL and they were getting ready to stand up the Rapid Innovation Office, you know, I had a couple handfuls of employees, and the AFRL director said, hey, come and let me know after a while if you've got the right number of employees or if you need more or whatever. So after probably about 6 months, I went back and had a meeting with him, and he says, okay, how are you doing? Are you resourced appropriately? And I said, well, I have the right number of people. I just don't have the right people. And he says, what do you mean? And I told him, I said, I need PhDs. And that comes from the Rick Pitino quote. And I said, he says, PhDs, I've got those in AFRL, but why do you need them in contracting? I said, what I need is not PhDs from a technical degree. I said, I need passionate, hungry, and driven people. And so to me, that's always been vital. And over time, we did get that right mindset of people in that office, and it actually excelled and did very well. So to me, that attitude and passion that you bring to the job, along with those other things I talked about, are vital.
Great stuff, sir. Thanks for sharing that experience. That ties things together really well. And that might be something we take for granted at times. On paper, we may have the right number of people, but are they the right people for what we're trying to accomplish? Throwing another sports analogy out there, every basketball team has the same number of players, but do they have the right personnel mix on the floor at the right time? Again, thanks for sharing your experiences in that regard. So how about this one? Going back several years to Howard Cosell and the wide world of sports, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. In our business, that thrill of victory might be when we get a contract awarded, or when teams or individuals get recognized for their accomplishments. Unfortunately, in contracting, things don't always go as planned. That agony of defeat might come when a program gets canceled, or even on a personal level, when we don't get that assignment we wanted or the promotion that we thought we deserved. We often talk about resilience, bouncing back from a loss or a setback. Can you share an example of a time when you or your team faced a significant challenge or setback, and how you managed to overcome it? What lessons did you and your team take away from that experience?
Yes, certainly. Very, very good, very important question. You know, I think first of all, it's important to understand that in what we do, just like in sports, there's going to be setbacks. There's going to be losses. There's going to be things that don't go the way we want them to. And we have to adjust to that. In AFIMSC, we talk a whole lot about resilience in our infrastructure, our energy, and for our installations as a whole. But resilience in our people is just as important. You know, really, the time I spend in AFRL kind of really helped me with this, because a lot of people maybe don't know this, but a lot of the research programs we have, from what they set out to do, were not necessarily successful. However, what we learned from those programs actually helped in a lot of other areas or in the future. I had the privilege of working with the National Aerospace Plane Program right at the end of its, before it was shut down. And, you know, from all outside purposes, you could say that program was a failure because we didn't develop a national aerospace plane. However, most of the technology that was developed there is really what's fueling and leading a lot of the hypersonic things that we have going now. So a lot of times, from setbacks or what could be perceived as a failure, there's a lot of good that come out of that. So we have to be resilient enough to go on. Probably the very best example I can think of this was years ago when I was working with a team when we were developing engine technology that was going to go to the F-22. That shows you how long that I've been around and how old I am. But anyway, we were trying to get to a certain thrust to weight goal just on a core part of an engine. And, you know, we had worked for several years in getting this demonstrator ready to go. One of the things I remember that, you know, it was a huge team effort, a lot of engineers, you know, program management played a big part of it. We were trying to get this all integrated and ready to go. So we all went down to the test stand to watch as they got ready to fire this thing up. Everybody was hopeful. Everybody was excited that we would meet the thrust to weight goal that we intended to. And about 3 seconds after they fired up the engine, it actually blew to smithereens. I mean, it completely blew up. So, I mean, you talk about a setback. I mean, we just all stood there with stunned faces. I mean, it was a horribly defeating feeling. And after a few minutes, you know, nobody really knew what to say, what to do. But our lead program manager at the time turned around and he said, "I think I know what went wrong, and I think we can do this better." And we actually ended up spending the rest of the next couple days of that TDY there, kind of going back to the drawing board. And, you know, I really never seen a team come together and rebound from such a catastrophic loss as what that was. It was probably about 8 months later that we were back at the same test stand with the same rebuilt and a little bit of a modified demonstrator engine put on the test stand. We fire the thing up and the afterburners come on, it sets the thrust to weight goals that we needed it to. It was kind of like being back on the basketball court, Rob, after a big win. People were high-fiving each other. We were hugging. We were cheering. I mean, it was an awesome experience. So I think, to me, one of the things we always need to remember is you can always bounce back. There's no job you won't get. There's no program failure that you can't bounce back from. And you can go back and you can wallow, you can make excuses. But I really, that team to me set probably a better example than any athletic team that I've been on in terms of bouncing back, going back to the drawing board, working hard, and then turning what was an abject failure into a great success.
Wow, sir, that's incredible. Thanks for sharing that excellent example on resilience. And in that instance of a team approach, the CO and the buyer, they aren't going to have that technical solution of what went wrong there. But we support, we provide, and getting things back on track is invaluable with the resources we provide. So kind of like our offensive lineman analogy, right?
And real quick on that, Rob, that's one of the other lessons that I learned really early on. You know, even though I was actually the buyer on that program, I was there, the contracting officer was there. But we were just as much a part of that team as any of the SMEs or any of the engineers. And that program manager who was leading us made everybody feel a part of that team. And that's why, you know, I always encourage all of our contracting people, all of our program managers we have here in AFIC, I always say, connect with what you're buying. Make sure you're part of that team and that you understand how you fit in, because that's huge.
Absolutely, sir. Great point. And our stakeholders absolutely appreciate that as well. They know if their buying team is bought in and engaged and invested in the program, or if we're just there to sort of process the paperwork. Excellent real-world example, sir, on so many levels. So we've covered a lot of ground so far, setting the stage that contracting truly is a team sport. We've talked accountability, feedback, personnel development, and resilience, all very important for the success of any team, but maybe we should have started with this one. How about the importance of a good game plan? Not just having a plan, but being able to execute it, communicating it so the entire team understands the plan and where they fit, and of utmost importance, being able to maybe adjust that plan if and when necessary. Can you share a success story or maybe a life lesson on the importance of having a good game plan or on the ability to modify a game plan where necessary? I'm sure in your world of enterprise sourcing, you must have several examples of that.
Yeah, I mean, the game planning is huge. I remember back in college, we would get detailed scouting reports on the other team. We kind of had an approach for how we were going to go into the game and what we were going to do, looking at the other team's tendencies, strengths, weaknesses, kind of assessing our own vulnerabilities and how we were going to attack that. Very much the same way we do with market research and acquisition planning. You know, I think about our seven-step process for services acquisitions that we implement on a lot of programs here, having a charter, program objectives, forming the team, and so forth. And certainly in all the things that we've done here, several examples come to mind. Probably the couple of them, one would be our land mobile radios, the handhelds that everyone have. This was a case where most organizations were actually buying a lot of these handheld radios with end of the year funds. A lot of times they were buying models and with bells and whistles on them that they didn't need. And there was really no good requirement definitization on this, no good inventory control. And we were probably paying, in fact, I know we were paying a lot more than we should have been. So our category management team went through a really long study on this to determine, hey, how can we do this better? Because what we were finding, Rob, was that at a lot of installations, there was three times the number of land mobile radios than were needed for the individuals there. And many of these were sitting on shelves and never being turned on and having to be disposed of. And so that, talk about just money going down the drain. So what our category management team was able to do here through an effective game plan and through effective planning was they figured out, number one, that we need to have a program management office to kind of set the requirements. We also need to make sure we're managing the demand and have an inventory control system so that we're not having excess radios that are going to waste and basically expiring and needing updates before we ever turn them on. We also figured out that we were buying these pretty standardly across the DAF so that there was a great opportunity there for an enterprise solution. So as a result of all of that planning, what we've been able to do is, number one, we've been able to put an enterprise vehicle in place for purchasing across the Air Force. So all the installations are getting a much better buy now than they were before when they were buying them individually. Second of all, we've got a program management office who's managing requirements so that, you know, we don't have one installation with radios with all the bells and whistles, another one that's got a bare bones. It's more standardized now across the Air Force. And we also have a good inventory control method so that we make sure we've got the right number. We've got a regular tech refresh process on those, just like we do in our IT department. And, you know, as I think back, that would never have happened without effective game planning. And certainly there were some adjustments that had to be made along the way, but that's just an example of how when you really step back and look at the market, look at what's going on from a bigger perspective, you can see the weaknesses and vulnerabilities you have. You can see the areas you need to improve. And we've actually managed to make the Air Force much more efficient and save quite a bit of money in that area. Another quick example that comes up is the what we did a couple of years ago with Operation Allies Welcome. You know, when we did the quick withdrawal out of Afghanistan, all of a sudden we were faced with thousands of refugees that we were going to have to shelter, clothe, and feed at various locations. With careful planning and the use of our Air Force Contract Augmentation Program, AFCAP contract, we were able to quickly provide all those services necessary, but it did take a lot of planning up front and quite a few adjustments along the way. For instance, we had to work closely with the Army and with the State Department to make sure that we weren't duplicating efforts. So that took some planning and adjustment even as we got going. We found out that as we were looking at bringing in medical support, that trying to bring, as contractors were trying to staff those medical offices, they were bringing some people in from out of state. That brought up a medical licensure issue. Somebody might be licensed in one state, but not another. So we had to work with the State Department and a lot of state governments to collaborate there so that we could make sure we had the appropriate doctors and nurses and medical care for the people. So a ton of planning went into that. As I think back when they showed things on the news or when a lot of the press, you saw the tents and you saw the care and everything that was coming to that. What people didn't see was all of the planning, coordination, and collaboration that went into that from the team. They didn't see all the adjustments that were made on the fly to make that happen. And certainly one of the, at least a proud thing for me, they didn't see that when the audit team came in afterwards and did an entire audit on all of those efforts, that it was actually a clean audit. They found out that money was not wasted, that we were very efficient and effective in what we did. So to me, that again, that would have never happened, just like the land mobile radios, without good planning, good adjustments on the fly. And just like a, just like a good football team or a good basketball team, what happens in the first half says a lot. But the adjustments you make and when you come out in the second half, it can be an entirely different game if the right adjustments are made. And in both of these examples, it was adjustments that kept the thing rolling.
Outstanding, sir. Two great examples on the need for a good game plan, but also the willingness to adjust that plan if and when that time comes. Perhaps a big reason for the need to adjust a game plan might be due to some unexpected distractions. So in PME, they refer to it as the fog of war, sort of like Mike Tyson's famous quote that everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. So I've always found it interesting in golf when a ball is sitting perfectly still and there's absolutely no defense, but there can be no distractions whatsoever. However, in baseball, when a ball is coming in at 100 miles an hour, or even in basketball when a player is attempting a free throw, or in football when you're trying to call a play, you have thousands of screaming fans and a myriad of distractions. So we're certainly not immune from distractions in government contracting. And it's certainly easy to get distracted in our business with changing requirements, urgent taskers, overflowing inboxes, and jam-packed schedules. What advice do you have for the workforce to help mitigate some of those distractions that can have a tendency of maybe eating up our time or maybe taking us out of our game plan?
Yeah, distractions are going to come certainly every day. And I, when I think about distractions, especially in the sporting realm, I always think about one of my favorite players was always Larry Bird. And I remember it was the end of late in the fourth quarter, game was on the line. Larry got fouled and he's going to the free throw line to shoot a couple free throws. This game was in L.A. They were playing the L.A. Clippers. The Celtics were playing the Clippers. And as he was getting ready to shoot his free throws, there was a, the fans were screaming and waving their hands behind the backboard and in the stands back there. One fan pulled up a full life-size poster of a swimsuit model. And Larry's reaction was priceless. I mean, he stopped dribbling, tucked the ball under his arm, and he stood there and just laughed. Because, he saw the distraction. It was definitely different than probably most things he had seen. But, after laughing, he went back, took a couple dribbles, and in typical Larry Bird fashion, sunk both free throws and helped them win the game. To me, that was always a great example of, not only you obviously being distracted, even acknowledging what was going on, but then coming back and refocusing on the task at hand and getting that done. Certainly, in our world, distractions happen every day. I think over my career, I remember, coming into the office, you've got your to-do list, the things that you want to get done, the things that you need to get done. And then all of a sudden fires come up, things come up, you get a phone call or an email, and all of a sudden it's completely changed. A tasker drops in, you get an email that you've got training due, the email traffic that we're flooded with constantly, policy changes, political changes, congressional inquiries. A coworker has a need or something they need to talk about. There's employees' personal issues, our own issues that we're dealing with. I mean, there's tons of distractions. The one thing I'll caveat in there real quick, though, especially when it comes to our employees or our coworkers or even ourselves, some of those aren't just distractions. They're really opportunities for training or helping or really being a good wingman to somebody. So we also need to view that, hey, some of those distractions are really opportunities. I had a supervisor years ago that was a really good mentor who told me that, hey, when that person knocks on your door, don't necessarily view that as a distraction, but hey, this is an opportunity for you to help somebody. I've always tried to take that mentality that, you know, regardless of what I'm doing, if somebody needs help, I'm going to do my best to help them. But I think in terms of the focusing part, we need to realize as an Air Force and contracting or acquisition community, what we're doing is important. And like Larry Bird, those distractions are going to come and we're going to have to deal with them. But then we need to refocus on the task at hand, refocus on our people, refocus on the mission and make sure we're getting there. I think one of the things that I've always tried to do, certainly as a senior leader now, is try to cut out as many of the distractions as I can for our folks. And I think we can all do better at that. I know I can do better at that too. There's a lot of things that are out of our control, but where we can, we really need to clear the way for our folks so that they can really concentrate on the task at hand. I think we can help with that by helping our folks understand here's the why behind what you're doing. Here's the priorities and why these are important. And I think that will help them focus and we get to. But I think anything we can do as a leadership team to help cut down on those distractions will be vital.
Thank you, sir. Great examples and excellent advice on dealing with those inevitable distractions. Thank you, Mr. Everidge. So one final question for you, sir. Keeping with our theme of contracting as a team sport, one thing our career field is missing is that feel-good, rags-to-riches, good versus evil, blockbuster Hollywood movie, right? Hockey has Miracle on Ice. Football has Rudy and Remember the Titans. Baseball has Major League. Okay, that one might be a bit of a stretch, but the list goes on. So all of these underdog sports movies, they leave us feeling motivated, like we were actually part of the team. And they all have that memorable pregame or halftime speech to rally the troops. So, well, let me set the stage for you, sir. We've seen the importance of the operational imperatives and the national defense strategy. We know the importance of the great power competition with China being considered a near peer, and there's constant unrest across the globe. That in itself would make for a pretty easy motivational speech for some of our major weapon system programs, right? But what would be your halftime speech for those of us at every level of the food chain, whether we're working staff projects, funding mods, contract closeout, or any of those other actions that don't quite make the national headlines or might be considered offensive linemen or support type duties. So how do we keep the passion and motivation in those areas on a daily basis? Do you have a halftime speech to rally the troops, sir?
Yeah, I wish I actually had a really good halftime speech, but, you know, to me, it's the mission of what we're doing is so important. You know, you mentioned a lot of those movies and my mind was going back over some of them and some of the speeches and I've heard a lot of those. You know, I think as a leadership team, we really need to work on this. And I think it starts with the why, as I mentioned earlier. Why are we doing what we're doing? Why are we buying what we're buying? I'm really happy that in our flight plan now, one of the initiatives, I believe it's under LOE1, is the why behind the buy, to try to help connect our folks with our mission better. But that comes down from the leadership chain all the way to that first line supervisor and you know, even that program manager, making sure everybody feels a connection to that mission. Why this is important, how your role fits in, and why that's vital. And we need to continually communicate that. You know, people need to understand the role that they're playing and why it's important and how it contributes to that mission accomplishment. You know, it really should be fairly easy on most of our programs, but even in contract closeout, where we lose a lot of funds every year, clearing those funds can be huge because that's money that we don't have to bring out of current year funds. And I think it's important for leadership to communicate to those people as to here's why you're doing this and why it's important. You know, again, kind of continuing on in the closeout vein, you know, we're getting ready to move everything over from ConRight to ConIT. And every contract that we close out in ConRight is one contract that we don't have to migrate over into ConIT. That's a lot of cost savings. That's a lot of time savings that, you know, if we can do that. And bottom line, Rob, as you said, we're in a great power competition, and being in a competition means we have competitors. You know, I remember when General Brown came out a few years ago with his accelerate, change, or lose memo. That should be a rallying cry for every one of us. You know, I think we all have a privilege of being in, you know, we live in the greatest country in the world. We're part of the best Air Force in the world, and we've got a great mission. And I think we need to sell that mission and help people connect to the mission. You know, I hear a lot of people talk about retention and what would we do for retention. I think connecting our people and even from a recruiting standpoint, getting people, recruiting people based on that mission is really, 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 really vital. You know, the stakes are high. You know, as we think about great power competition and everything that Secretary Kendall has said, our way of life's at stake. And we in contracting get to play a part in that by helping develop and deliver those capabilities to the warfighter. So that really should be a motivation thing to us. You know, as I said earlier, we just got to keep connecting people to the mission. And, you know, every once in a while, that's brought home to me in a very real way. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, really passionate, really love what we do. Like I said, from somebody who started and didn't even know what government acquisition or certainly contracting was, to, you know, I've fallen in love with it, been doing it for 38 years now, and absolutely phenomenal. But, you know, even I remember coming out of a meeting in San Antonio down at AFIMSD headquarters, probably several months back. And it was just one of those meetings where you think, oh, my God, why am I doing this? This is bad. You know, maybe I should just go ahead and retire and give this up. But as I got on the plane that evening to come back to Dayton, I sat down by it was a little lady sitting there, and she just started up a conversation. And she says, oh, sir, what do you do? And I said, oh, I work for the U.S. Air Force doing acquisition contracting. And she looked at me with a big smile on her face, and she said, that is really cool. And, you know, I had to smile back and I said, you're right. It is really cool. So I always tell that story to a lot of the groups I get to talk to, because what we do is really cool. We are part of the greatest Air Force in the world. We're part of a great mission. We need to sell that. We need to sell that passion. So to me, the rallying cry is, hey, we've got a competition going on. You get to play a part in that. And we need, as General Brown said, we need to win. We don't want to lose this. So let's bring our best to it every single day. So, Rob, with that, I mean, I don't know what else I can say. I wish I had the right words to motivate people even more, but I think just the passion to bring to that and realize that you are part of something much bigger than yourself is just an awesome thing that we get to do every day in the Air Force.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Supporting the greatest Air Force and the greatest nation is something we should all be able to take a lot of pride in. And with that, we can be PhDs, right? We can be the passionate, the hungry, and the driven. So, yes, sir, and I'll start working on that screenplay, and you can think of who you'd like to portray Tony Everidge in the Hollywood version of The Contracting Experience. So, Mr. Everidge, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and insight on The Contracting Experience and showing how contracting truly is a team sport. This has been a great conversation, and I'm grateful you could join us. On behalf of the Contracting Experience podcast, all of our listeners and subscribers, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure having you. Do you have any parting shots for our listeners, sir? Any final inspirational thoughts for the troops?
No, just again, thank you for allowing me to be part of this and be able to share a little bit of my experience, especially with the sports analogies. It was great. And just, you know, when I speak to a lot of the Copper Cap groups, you know, nowadays, a lot of times I tell them I'd almost like to be back in their seat starting over, because it's been a great career. And one of the things I want to do, at least from the level I'm at now, if I could help everybody to have as awesome as a career as I've had, that's exactly what I do. I think it's a great Air Force. It's a great career field. So just enjoy it.
Excellent, sir. Thanks again. And thank you to all of our podcast listeners, followers, and subscribers. If you have any feedback, suggestions for topics, or future guests you would like to hear on the podcast, you can submit those via email to thecontractingexperience@gmail.com. As a reminder, you can subscribe to the Contracting Experience podcast from any of your podcast listening platforms. You can also now find us on Facebook and YouTube. Be sure to like us, follow us, and subscribe to receive updates and automatic downloads so you don't miss a single episode. I'm your host, Rob Lorton, from the AFMC Contracting Digital Division, and I hope you can join us again on our upcoming episodes. Until then, stay tuned and stay connected.